Hi, my name is Jordan. I am a special education teacher from the UK. I share my passion for everything communication, sensory regulation, and fun lesson ideas for my classroom of disabled pupils aged 4 to 11. Each week, I am joined by experts in the field, answering your questions and sharing our knowledge and experience working alongside our beautiful young people. Let's get started. Everybody, I'm going to be joined with the amazing Mrs. Price's Classroom on Instagram. I followed her for a while now and I absolutely adore everything she shares, and we're going to be talking all about our classrooms and our visual use and AAC.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. It is so good to chat with you. I've just been saying that I've been loving your account for ever since I started this, which was Christmas.
Likewise.
Absolutely loving your account. I feel like we're pretty similar in how we lead our classrooms. Whenever you have an idea, I'm like, oh, I wish I thought of that first.
I've had so many ideas from you. I've actually loved your page. And you know, I said to my work friends today, I guess who I'm doing a live with, and they were like, oh, I know her. You're worldwide famous.
And you're getting yourself out of your comfort zone, aren't you? It's your first live, so that's so exciting.
My first ever live.
And so welcome. Can you fire away and we can just...
Excellent. Well, the first one, new to the role of SEN in an afternoon provision, how should I plan?
Okay, so I'm assuming that it's mainstream, it's some kind of nurture hub in the afternoon.
Very possibly.
And they've been and asked to lead it, and they've got no idea what to do.
And I think... The word that strikes out for me is afternoon. So it's like, okay, they've had a full day, it's the afternoon. Yes. That's going to be important for them to plan wisely for the afternoon, because as we know, for a lot of our students, once they've had lunch, that's it, we're done.
Yeah, totally. yeah, exactly, especially by the end of the week. So I'm assuming in the morning they'll be doing English and maths, won't they?
I assume so. Yeah, that's all I've got. New to the role of SEN in an afternoon provision, how should I plan?
Yeah, so I'd assume I would want, well, it's an SEN provision as well, so they would have EHCP. So maybe I would look at their, I would focus it around their IEPs. Maybe look at some targets that are difficult to get in the classroom, that are difficult to get alongside other children, that might be to do with taking turns, it might be to do with independence, it might be to do with communication, whatever it is. Maybe focus the learning on those kind of things to kind of get those, because that's the legal requirement, really, isn't it? When you're an SEN position, we can do whatever we want, really, but we have to be meeting those particular EHCP statements and points, yeah, don't we? So I suppose that's quite a good start, because otherwise it's so open that you really could do anything. It's easy to have that, isn't it?
Absolutely. And in terms of the environment, I mean, I love setting up an environment. I love the visual. But obviously, that's going to be really important as well, making sure the environment's set up for them, clearly defined areas, mm-hmm, a space for a bit of a chill out area. You know, do they need their own space, a space for group work? I mean, there's so much that you can do in there. But yeah, definitely, as you say, go for those targets, IEP targets, and make sure the afternoon is just a calm,
yeah, and less demand on them and maybe more child led maybe. So you've got the structure, I call it a flexible structure. So yes, you've got the structure of certain areas, you've got the schedules up, they know what they're doing, it's predictable. But it's flexible in the way of, if they need a sensory break, they just have it. If they need a snack, they just have it. Yes. If they need the toilet, they just go. Yeah. You know, all of those kind of things.
Build that trust and relationship with them first, completely, definitely. So, no, good luck to whoever that
exactly
is.
Exactly. That would refuel them as well, wouldn't it? It would refuel them for the next day to then go into the classroom and start again. And it might help them last a little bit longer in the class as well, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the word nurture hub, because I feel like it feels like a hug in a word, doesn't it? Nurture hub. And if all of us are seeing our classrooms as nurture hubs,
yeah,
I just think that's really lovely. We're just kind of holding our children up and giving them everything they need in order to feel safe enough to learn and make
progress.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Should we go for another one?
Yes.
Right, what do you find works best as a strategy/support for engaging students with their own agenda?
Okay.
Well, my first thought was with their own, you go with their own agenda if that's what they're keen on and what's their interest, what's their drive. Yeah. And you start with that, don't you? And you build that relationship with them first and then start incorporating the learning within their own agenda.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's the same with us, right? If we're trying to make friends or trying to build connections with people, you don't start talking about yourself and your interests. You find out about theirs. And it's no different than that. You become their partner, don't you? I've got a happiness audit. I don't know if you've seen it, but it basically works out what helps the child feel happy. And there's things like what sensory environment makes them happy, what tastes make them happy, what smells make them happy, what people make them happy. And it really goes through all of the things. And we're basically auditing what is happiness for this child, what does it look like. And I guess I would start there and think, okay, what does heaven look like for this child? One of my TAs is laughing today. I said, oh, he's had such a good day. And he went, well, of course he has, this is heaven to him. Well, what am I doing if it's not right?
Exactly. Yeah.
He had Andy dinosaurs on, he had his Chewy, he was rocking on his chair, he was full of three snacks and had all the crisps or whatever he'd just done his sensory regulation, he was so holding his dinosaur, he was so happy. Mm-hmm. And I think, well, yeah, this is a happy child. He's going to learn. He's going to communicate. I'm doing my job if this is heaven for them.
Absolutely.
So I know that's a big ask, but if we could try and create their ideal scenario, their ideal resources, learning in their ideal way. Like, so for some children, it looks quite quiet and quite isolated and quite no demands, whereas other children it looks very involved, very active, outside, messy. It's different for every child, isn't it? So there's no one answer for that. It's just getting to know them.
I was gonna say getting to know their drive and going with it and then start incorporating those little bits of learning in there at their own pace, at their own level, isn't it?
And that works for any child at any level, at any stage, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It's being genuinely interested in what they're interested in as well. It's not just listening, it's not just responding, you know, call and response when they're chatting to you. It's genuinely like finding your joy in what they like.
Absolutely.
And it can be really random, like flicking bits of lanyard, for example. I've got a child that flicks bits of lanyard. If you do it, it feels really good, and it's good to find joy in that rather than just sitting by them and accepting them. Of course, that's step one. How great if we could just join them in the joy and you could do that with any child, really.
Definitely. No, perfect. Have we got quite a few things?
We have got so many coming in. I'm struggling to encourage a child to leave the classroom to participate in sensory activities because he only wants to play with his twiddle toy. This is mainstream.
Okay.
I would, rather than prompting them to go outside, I would just be really fun doing the sensory activity kind of within eye and earshot. Yeah. And if I'm fun enough, and if I've chosen the sensory activity well enough to meet their needs and interests, they will just join it.
Yeah, not making much, don't put too much of a pressure on
them joining.
Yeah, because they'll sense it, pick it up straight away, completely shut down.
And often, not just in mainstream, in all schools, often the older the children are, they've learned that adults bring demand, bring stress, adults bring anxiety. Yeah. So they almost lose the trust of, even though it looks really fun, they're not going to trust that you're not going to show them to do something, tell them to do something that they can't do or whatever it is. It's almost learned, which is such a shame, but I see that all the time in my classroom as well.
Yeah.
If I'm just having fun doing stuff around them, often they do want to join, and if they don't, that's okay. I just need to then adapt what I'm doing. But yeah, if the sensory activities you're doing meet their interests and their needs, I don't know why they wouldn't. And especially if they feel safe in the environment, because maybe leaving the classroom is actually too much, actually. Maybe that's their safety zone, and maybe you need to start doing the sensory activity there before you start transitioning and doing a new activity. That sounds like quite a big ask.
And it's working out what is the actual worry and anxiety this student has to be able to leave the room. Yes. What is it? Then work on that, isn't it? And then there's so many ways to help support
transition. And I guess if it has to be outside of the classroom, and we were getting on to transitions, if it has to be outside of the classrooms, I've been known before to bring one of our iPads outside.
I was just about to say, record the way.
Do a little vlog, basically, of what to expect when they get there, of the journey, what to expect when they get there, and then they can watch it back. Now, if all they do that first time is watch that video, fine. Often they watch it and they go, nope.
And make sure they have, if it's spinning, that's the key. Have a few spinning things there at the transfer. When they watch the video, they go, oh, well, they got this, they got spinning things, they got spinning things.
Exactly. And he can bring his twiddle toy with him as a bit of a transitional object. There's no reason why he couldn't bring his twiddle toy with him.
Oh, yeah, completely.
To do the sensory activity, it might feel better. And then it might go be put down once he sees it. But maybe that's a bit of a comfort thing, I can imagine.
It's security, isn't it?
Exactly. And if he only wants to play with his twiddle toy, I've known children like that before, it's less of a fidget and it's more of a it's like, none of this exists. I'm in my own world. This is a bit scary. I just need me time.
Yeah.
So taking that away and transitioning and a new activity just might be a little bit too much.
A lot. Yeah.
I'm imagining.
Excellent.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot. She's also said he becomes very distressed and this is very distracting for the other children. I can imagine he does find it distressing. It's quite, even though it seems quite simple for us to just put down something, go somewhere and do something really fun, there's a lot of steps there. There's a lot of things.
I was going to say, you need to take that anxiety away first, isn't it? Focus on the game.
Yeah, because I'm assuming you're doing this to regulate him. But actually, in turn, we're putting so many demands and asks of him in order to become regulated.
He's
going to have the opposite effect.
Yeah.
So really, yes, I say do sensory breaks. Yes, I say go outside. But actually, at its core, we just want regulated children. And if he needs to do it inside to be regulated, or if he needs to bring his twiddle with him to be regulated, I'd say that.
He's always participated in the past, which makes you think, obviously, something's happened on the transition then that may sound like create a lot of anxiety. So you need to try and sort of work out what it is that's traumatized him to be able to want to stay in the classroom and use that even more as a security
thing. And it might be that in September it's a new class. He used to transition out of his old class. Now this is a new class and he's got to build up to it again. Well, you might think, oh, well, you did that last year. Why can't you do it this year?
And it's mainstream, isn't it? We know mainstream is a very busy, noisy, overload environment. So it's extremely difficult. To want to transition in that must be extremely hard.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of asks. Okay, yeah, he's in the same class with the same teacher.
I was gonna say something's happened in transition then. I think something's happened within that transition, you know. I think they need to work on what has happened, and most likely possibly something's happened in a corridor that's completely spooked the student. And it's better to stay in my safe place with my safe twiddle spinning, and it's just working on that, I think.
Maybe either bring comforts with you or start the activities where he's at and build up to transition, I'd say. Either or, if that's his safe space. Have you got a question?
Well, I had one person to ask. I have children working at around 9 months to 2 years, and they find role play doesn't work.
Yeah.
Now, my first thought was, if they're working at that sort of ability, then role play is too much too fast, and too, you know, cognitively wouldn't be able to understand role play. So it's breaking that down completely, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's without a diagnosis of autism as well, isn't it? It's rather than putting our adult idea of what play looks like on the child, it's actually flipping it and thinking about what play looks like for them and then joining them in that, and us becoming the learner and then becoming the expert in play. Sometimes it looks like tidying up. Sometimes it looks like tipping out. Sometimes it looks like connecting things. Sometimes it looks like spinning things. Sometimes it looks like jumping and climbing. That might be their play, and that's perfectly great and where they're at. And then we can join them in that. Typically, role play happens around 3.5, 4, and that's if you've got a analytical, non-neurodivergent brain, right?
Absolutely.
I know some autistic adults that have done their GCSEs that have never been interested in role play. Not because they can't, they're just not interested in it. It's just not fun for them. Yeah. And I think we need to respect that too. It's not the be all and end all, I would say. I've never had a class. I've taught aged 3 to 19. I've never had a class that were interested in role play. I've got added classes that are interested in dressing up, wearing hats, dressing up in things, but never that taking on a role kind of thing.
I've never had the being something else. Yeah, being something else.
But that doesn't mean they don't. I just haven't had that. I've known other classes with my colleagues that have. So it's just about learning.
But that's a really hard skill, you know. Even adults, acting, isn't it? You're acting, you know. Some people find it really difficult, but no, definitely learn. Go with what they're playing with. Learning through play. I'm all for that at the moment. I love it.
Yeah, and I guess the best thing about role play is the communication aspect, trying out something that you haven't done before. Well, you can do that in loads of other ways that isn't role play, can't you? You can do lots of two-way conversation kind of games, turn-taking games, cause and effect kind of toys. It's all that kind of two-way conversation. Musical instruments is a lovely one. You can have a conversation and no words are even spoken. So you can really practice on those skills, but at that kind of early level, you said 9 months to 2 years. So that's how it would look, I would say, in that kind of stage. Yeah, okay. And all of my students are at that stage, actually. They're kind of between, yeah, 3 months and two, I suppose. I hate putting ages to it, but it helps people understand, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I've got a question here. How to get my son to try different things or decide how to make choices? So there's two things there. How to get my son to try different things?
Depending on the things. I mean, I don't know if we're talking food here or other things, but
I mean, let's just assume toys, I think, how to make choices. Yeah.
I mean, having different items available, again, not putting pressure on the child, but role modelling without expectation, you know, even away from him, you could be at the other side of the room, suddenly you start playing with an item and doing different things with it, and just, you know, being really over-exaggerated with your play in the hope that maybe, and don't rely on just on the first time thinking, oh, well, you know, wasn't interested, that's it. Over time, these things take so much time, but obviously it's so worth it, isn't it, when you get that. Maybe one day he might just stand up and look at you, perfect, let's work on that. In the hope that one day he'll come and sit next to you and play with you, and then we'll gradually move closer to him perhaps, and have different items as well with different cause and effects, like you say, working on their interests. You go for it.
There's so many. Attention autism in your class.
We do, yeah.
Yeah, so I often use that to introduce new toys, new resources, new anything, just because it tells the whole group and the adults all the things the toy might be able to do or give us. And I can model it, and then it's their turn and we can support them with it. And I just think it's a really great way in a structured, safe, predictable setting that they are comfortable with to be able to see, oh, actually, that's really fun. Oh, actually, I like that resource. Otherwise, if I just got a new resource and put it out there, they might not even notice it or even know it's fun until they've seen that. So it's not to say that there's only one way of playing with it, but it's just to open up that the conversation of this could be fun. What do you think we could use this for? Like I bought a spinning fish seat last week. I've now bought two. It's an incredibly expensive hobby teaching. But I've got two spinning fish seats now. And I introduced it through attention autism. We did it as a stage 3 activity. So it was my turn, it was the supporting adult's turn, and then it was their turn. And they go, oh, great. Yeah, you sit on this, you spin it really fast. Right, I love this. This is great. Whereas if they just saw it in the room, they wouldn't necessarily know what is fun about it. It just is like a metal seat, you know, it's not fun. So yeah, attention autism is a great way of trying different things. How to decide how to make choices. I mean, there is a route that you can do of not giving them the option of two things that you know they do want. You know, you can start just by offering them one thing that you know they really, really love and something that's really, really boring. Yes. And it's just the practice, the art of choosing, because that's the first skill, isn't it? Is either looking or reaching or batting away the one they don't want, whatever it is. That's the early stages. We do it. We started it with one of my learners. We had a food pouch and then a coloured paper, the same colour but just paper. And he had to choose which one he wanted. Well, clearly he always wants the food pouch. He knows he wants the food pouch. And it was just really good practicing for the art of choosing and us reading what he does with his choice, because actually he doesn't reach for the one he wants at all. He bats away the one he doesn't. So now we know when we give him a choice, if he reaches for one, it's not because he wants it, he's batting it away. So it helps us with that the understanding and his communication as well.
And this is similar to what we go down, preferred and non-preferred, and then start gradually putting another choice in and seeing Serene how they cope with that. But again, no pressure, no demand. But it is hard to make choices. You know, we all find it difficult to make choices, especially if it's something that we really, really want.
I'd say maybe if they're choosing both of them, then if the situation allows, could they have both? Like sometimes we want both. It depends where they're at, doesn't it? And is it objects you're showing them? Is it symbols you're showing them? Is it photos you're showing them? That could have a difference as well of the understanding. I've got some children that I will show objects to, and they're just not fussed either way as well.
And be careful of the amount of praise as well, because I've got a mixture who love the praise. You made a choice, and then I've made that mistake of going, I don't want it now.
You get to know really quickly, don't you, who you can praise, and sometimes I have to really push it down because I'm so proud of them. Yeah, it's so true. And then they're like, oh no, never again. Oh no, we're back to square one again. Oh dear. I've got one here. So a 6-year-old stayed in the same EYFS class, struggling to regulate and bond with their one-to-one. They regulate well with other adults. We are tag teaming to support him, trying to get the TA to understand he isn't being difficult. Sometimes it can be a whole number of things that the TA isn't even aware of. It could be a certain smell. There are a whole range of sensory things. I worked with a child before that used to say, oh, you stink, and to one particular TA, and she just couldn't get on with her. And we worked out it was a certain perfume that she had, and she just could not stand it. So, of course, she couldn't concentrate or be regulated.
Yeah.
So it could be as simple as that. It could be that she wears necklaces or rings and they make a little tinkle sound.
I had a student back in the day years ago. I can't even remember how we just worked it out. But basically, he would not talk to me if I wore stripes on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And that took ages, but it was obviously just this thing, and it took ages to work that out. But yeah, don't talk to persons.
It's amazing to work that out. We all make little rules and routines for ourselves, but even more so with autism, because they're trying to make their world feel predictable, because it's so unpredictable. That they often make really seemingly bizarre, but not obviously. It's perfectly normal for them, choices and rules for themselves to make the world feel safer. And if that is don't wear stripes on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, then that's what that is. Then you can't do much to fix that until you know. So I suppose the real answer is make sure you're logging what any triggers are.
Yeah.
It could be a certain lesson. It could be a certain person. At least you know it's a certain person. It could be just their voice, their tone of voice.
I was going to say it might be the case that maybe, you know, they didn't like the tone of voice, you know, one day, you know, maybe it wasn't, you know, meant that way, but they could have taken something completely the wrong way, and that's it, shut down mode, and you need to build on that relationship again. If he was able to regulate with others, but not this particular member of staff.
Also, we all get on with some people and not others.
Absolutely.
And the difference is that we care too much about what people think. So show it.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, I think it's rather beautiful that you know exactly where you stand with often lots of our learners. And it's okay. Maybe this person isn't meant to work with this child, and sometimes that's okay.
Yeah.
I try to pair up my adults and children thinking about personality traits, like the adults that are really up for it and running around and happy to be outside all the time in all weathers. They'd be wasted on children that aren't like that. So I try and I with my pairings, I try to think really carefully about personality, likes, interests, just because then you're going to get the best results, aren't you? I feel like that's part of creating the timetable. Sometimes is just thinking about personalities and what's going to work. But yeah, sometimes it is something that you aren't even aware of, like a smell or a way somebody speaks even could be really triggering.
Or something you've eaten in front of the child, maybe, and that's it, no one like
Or something
that.
that you ate earlier in the day and they can smell it and it's great. Yeah, exactly. The thing is with sensory regulation, they're feeling all their senses at the same volume, all at the same time. So yeah, it could be all sorts of things, couldn't it? But the thing is, we need to kind of respect that because we can change just ourselves to a point, but ultimately we can't. And if they're not learning and not regulated, then we need to make a change, not them.
That's good, so yeah, definitely.
Any strategies to support a pupil who is acting violent towards staff and pupils? We try to make sure obvious needs are met, but some days it feels like we are continually telling him to have kind hands.
Oh, it's
I
a
think
tricky one.
this one comes up quite often, I think.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. You just want to know more about that. More about try and pinpoint what the
But
problem
don't you
is,
think?
isn't it?
I think that's the point, isn't it? I think I would start some kind of ABC chart or something
Start logging.
to try and work out where is this happening, when is it happening, and then ultimately, why is this
What
happening?
is the trigger? Yeah, is it transition times? Is it directed work? The way that you're introducing the work to the student,
Is it
are
always
they ready?
paperwork?
Yeah,
Is it
are
always
they regulating themselves beforehand? Are they ready to learn? I was gonna say, you're making sure their basic needs are met. Do they get toilet, food, drink? But yeah, it's definitely trying to work out what that trigger could be. And again, it's going back from all the things we said previously. It could be anything of those, isn't it, that we spoke about in the
And
last week.
acting violent towards staff and pupils, I mean, ultimately, that's communicating go away, isn't it? Ultimately, I mean, if you want people to go away quickly and get off your back quickly, that's a really effective way of doing it, isn't it?
And how and the reaction that he expects, in the part, how have you reacted in the past? Say he knows that works.
Absolutely.
I know you go away, and I get to get out of that situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fight, fright, or flight, isn't
Like,
it?
yeah.
It's the fight. So we need to be offering other ways that they can get that space.
And
Well,
start
and it's not work
incorporating.
first, then have space. I see that all the time. It's space. I need space now. It's as important as breathing for these children. They need space. And yes, okay, they might learn it's an opt out, blah, 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 blah. Yes. I get that. But more often than not, it is just because they genuinely need space. And when they're calm, they can come back and finish their job when they're regulated. But when a child is asking for space, we need to honour it because otherwise they're going to be violent and then they're going to get space anyway. And then the work's never going to be done anyway. So let's kind of
I was going to
twist
say,
it and.
you've lost the trust, isn't it? You're going to push me, you're going to push me, but actually now the learning isn't there. You need to backtrack now and again start building on that relationship and doing something fun with this
Because
boy.
otherwise the
No
learning isn't going to
expectations.
happen anyway, and then the trust is broken as well. So you're on a lose-lose really. So it might feel like you're giving in, or it might look like you're giving in to other people, and you might get judgment for that. I hear that all the time, that TAs are saying it. I keep getting told off for like giving him what he wants. I mean, no, you're doing
No,
exactly what you
you
should be
need to do
doing, and
that.
it's so hard, isn't it, when you're in a room with judging adults. It's really, no matter what your role is, it's really challenging
And I get it,
you're
because
on board.
there must be so much pressure, I suppose, to think that I have to get this boy to this, to learn this and to do this at the end of this. But actually, no, it takes a lot of time to build that trust and relationship. If the learning's not there, there's absolutely no point in pushing that. Go back to square one, start again, like you say, work out those triggers
And
and
ultimately, what's the point? They could be author ready, they could be PhD ready, they could know quantum physics. If they're violent to people when they want space rather than asking for it, they're not going to be able to achieve anything in life, no matter how well academic they are, So without these fundamental social skills and self-regulation skills, we've lost them at the first hurdle. They could be as clever as anything and learning all these things, and actually it's kind of good for nothing, really. I used to say that a lot about my my first class. They were year kind of age 11 to 16. I had them over 5 years. And some of them were incredible at maths, incredible. But they would never be able to get on a bus and buy a bus ticket. They'd never be able to go into a shop independently and give coins and get change for what they want. They could do it over the table till the house, the cows come home. They could times and dust decimals and all these things. They're incredible. But what was I doing all that for if I wasn't also working on their independence and social skills and confidence and self-esteem and all those things that we put second actually enable the children to use the skills they're learning?
Yeah, I mean, there's some stuff, isn't there, that we can't assess curriculum-wise that just means so much more and meaningful to the child for their own independence and life skills, isn't it? And I remember a student in particular, I ended up having her for 3 years, but it took a year. It took the first year just to get her head out of my chest, because that was her safe space. The majority of the time she would just come to me, bury herself in me, and it would just take so long to get her just to sit down for 2 minutes away from me. And
that takes you away from other people, doesn't it?
It's making sure it's okay to know that it takes time and a lot of patience, you know, but all those skills that I couldn't assess on paper, you know curriculum wise, but after the last, it took a year, but at the end of the year we're like, look how far she's come.
Yeah,
and then it
was because they catch up to their own where they can. Since September we haven't had a teacher. We are finally getting our class teacher on Wednesday. Wow. This is for a specialist school. Any tips on what I could do to help smooth the change of face? This is really interesting, isn't it? Because when I often speak to teachers coming into classes, and my answer is always, don't think you have to know it all. Lose your ego. Listen to the teaching assistants. They know the children. They know the class. They know what they've tried before. Don't come in bullshy and feel like you have to prove yourself. Be humble and just follow their lead is what I say to teachers. But this is really interesting. We're not talking to the teachers, it's the other way around. So, I mean, I really hope that you would have a really humble teacher come in and say, help me.
Yes.
But that's not always the way, because sometimes when we're feeling unsure and we've got our own self-esteem stuff going on and we don't know the children, we feel a little bit, you know, like we should be knowing it, you might come in actually the opposite of humble. We could have big egos and want to stamp things and put our name to things and make change and prove ourselves. And that could be really difficult as a supporting adult in a class when you know the children and you know how they work.
Yeah, and I can say we're 3 weeks in now. So, you know, routines will start to have been embedded with the student. So I think it's important for support staff to be able to tell this teacher who comes in next week to go, we are open to your ideas and your suggestions. At the moment, since week one, this is how we've been doing it. We've noticed that there's a bit of, you know, we need a bit of tweaking. So your input is great.
Yeah.
We're noticing this is really working at the moment. Just making sure that the teachers, you're sort of putting
that's
that
great. In,
that we are aware that, you know, you're going to bring things and brilliant. We're open-minded. Mm-hmm. But if there's some really important things that you think, actually, no, this is working, we really want, then I think you need to be open and honest with this team and go, this is what we're noticing is working. Don't be afraid to be open and honest, because like I say, support staff, you're there every single day, you know. I'm there 4 days a week, my one day paperwork. So you know these students a lot more, these little routines, you know a lot more, because I'm at my desk or doing other things.
Yeah.
You know. So I always would say be open and honest.
Yeah.
Open and honest to this teacher.
Yeah, and also just willing to try. It might be that her way sounds like a way you've tried before, but it might have a really subtle difference that actually does support your students. So it is about coming with humility, coming with no egos on your side, but also advocating for the children at the end of the day, isn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah, and maybe asking for opportunities to meet together without the children there. Because it's always awkward. I don't like talking about children in front of children and all of that. So if there's a carved out time also within those first crucial few days where you can get together, get your heads right. This is working, this isn't. What are we going to do about this? Trying to keep consistency so that you're not all doing different things and have different agendas, trying to really keep that solid. But it's hard for very established teams. But the fact that you've asked this question, I think, is wonderful. That says all I need to know about this wonderful class, yes. Really.
Yeah, definitely. Good luck.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I often say just the fact that the algorithm has put you in in front of you says all I need to know. You're searching the right things, you're the right person. Okay, my child is 7, very smart, but won't sit down in class. Excels in occupational therapy and speech therapy, but they won't sit down in class.
Well, I mean, excels in OT, brilliant. Then, you know, it's a self-regulating thing, isn't it, that you're just going to have to really slowly start introducing the chair but allowing that student to have that space. Where they're put in the room is going to be a big factor, you know. Obviously, if they're at the front of the room and if you're trying to get them to sit down, then of course that's going to disrupt others. So maybe watch out where you're placing the student, maybe at the back of the room. And so if there is space for him to sort of run up and down,
and have regular breaks,
having one of the spiky cushions. I love the spiky cushions. Yeah. They're still moving on that chair. I mean, can you do work standing up? I mean,
that's what I was going to say. Maybe work standing up, or maybe how long is he being asked to sit down for?
Yes, pinpoint exactly when actually you do want him to be able to sit down. Yeah, but I mean, like I say, work standing
in
up.
In my classroom, I think the only thing we make them sit down, I mean, God, you know me, I don't make them do anything, but they encourage them to sit down is when they're eating.
Yes.
Because there's a safety element it's for no other reason than safety. But yeah, they do their workstation standing up, they can do their work standing up, they can join attention autism standing up or pacing or whatever. But when they're the first time I would ask them to sit down or model sitting down with them would be to eat. I think that feels different to me. That walking eating thing, there is other things going on there, isn't there?
And do you know what, back in the day, if you were to ask me even two years ago this question, I possibly would have said, how about giving a timer? But you know what, I've just learned now through everyone on Instagram with their amazing ideas and inspiration that actually doing that is counterproductive in a way, because you can't, like I say, you've got a timer, you put it on for 30 seconds, you can't make a child sit down, you can't force a child to sit down. And then if you lose that first minute, you know, they get up after 10 seconds of your 30 minute time, you've lost it already. What you're trying to do. Yeah.
And then what you're going to do, restrain them? Like, exactly. No.
So it's pointless, but it's just interesting how I was thinking. Yeah. Back in the day, I would have said, timer in and work on building it up. But actually, no, you know, I get rid of.
And I suppose maybe they're sitting down for a fun activity. Like my kids, they never sit for 40 minutes. Mm. But Friday lunchtime, I got slime out, and 4 of my learners out of 10 were sat for 40 minutes over their lunch break. They could choose to get up whenever they wanted using slime. So that might be a really great way of practicing the art of sitting, is by providing something that makes them want to.
And if it's in terms of moving your feet, you know, sitting on a bouncy ball at the table, or you know, sitting on something else as well, or like you say, having something that they can tap their feet on, a stepper sometimes that might work, but they're still moving
and
their feet.
Have you seen the TheraBands?
Yes,
they're on the legs. Yeah, and you put them on the chair legs, and then you can bounce your feet or legs against them, or you can stretch your feet up against it. And wobble cushions, I don't always sit on them, but sometimes I put them under their feet.
I was going to say on the feet. Well.
That works really well, doesn't it? Vibration cushions as well. Gives lovely movement if they can either sit on them or lean back on them. Yeah. There's lots of ways of getting movement when you're sat, and maybe that's a good thing as well to look into. There's another one here, I just seen it, which I thought was worth mentioning. It's not a question, but it's worth mentioning. I attended a talk from a young autistic lady. She explained a massive meltdown when she was non-speaking, as someone had changed the colour of their front door on her daily route and the frustration she felt.
Yeah.
I think we can learn a lot from autistic speakers. I've seen a few, and I always leave feeling really like I always leave feeling like I understand just a little bit more, but also there's a lovely reminder that I've still got so much more to learn. Mm-hmm. It's a really amazing insight into what our non-speaking learners might be feeling. Obviously it's not guaranteed, no one knows, but one of the speakers, It's Always Sat With Me, said that her skin his skin on his head is as sensitive as his eyeball, and that is why he doesn't like to have it shaved. Can you imagine, like, shaving your eyeball? No wonder he doesn't want it to be shaved. So that sits with you. You can't hear that and work with autistic people and not think, but what if they all are? And of course, like, maybe they're not, but what if they are?
Well, just, you know, what gives you that bit more awareness and compassion for
those children that strip their clothes all the time? Yeah. What if their skin is as sensitive as an eyeball? Yeah. I wouldn't want clothes touching my eyeball either. Yeah. You know, and it's almost best to assume that it is. Because it just gives so much more understanding. They're not being awkward. It's not bad behavior. It's not a choice. These senses are so heightened, or, you know, seeking or whatever. There is real reason. And these speaking autistic adults that are doing these incredible talks, putting themselves out of their comfort zone and sharing this knowledge, are at the forefront of us understanding and doing better, really.
Absolutely. And just what you've just said there with the lady that pinned about the coloured door, you underestimate how many things in their day before they come into school that could really upset them. You know, it breaks my heart, for example, where I know we've got a lot of students where, you know, we've got a massive shortage of school escorts on minibuses, and how many times there's been no escort on the bus, or you know, change of face and everything, or in a taxi, you know. Yeah. And it just breaks your heart thinking, well, you know, would you want your 11-year-old had to go on a taxi without that familiar comfort face?
That's right.
You know, to be new driver, a stranger going to school. But it's all those other things, you know, in a traffic jam and everything, you just don't realise.
Yeah, I always like to think, if something's changed in their school routine, for example, they don't go up to the field because it's wet play, for example, I like to assume that my learners then think, but does that mean I then don't go home? Does that mean I don't have lunch? Does that mean I don't have dinner? Does that mean I don't see my mum and dad ever again? Like, we know... Of course those things aren't happening. Of course they're still good. It's just a wet field. It will be fine tomorrow. Let's assume that they don't know those things. Let's talk them through it. Let's have a visual schedule. I mean, that's what's so important about visual schedule, is that it makes it concrete. They can say, oh, it is wet play, but then I'm still going home. Oh, okay. Some of my learners only have the next few jobs on their visual schedule. Some children have till lunchtime. But one of mine, it's really important that he sees home on the schedule. So we have it as long as the wall. It's about 2 meters long, this thing. Everything he does that day, and it's really important that we think really carefully. I've spent ages doing it, thinking, right,
what
how
are they missing?
Going to go through this? We can't have home time at 12 o'clock, you know.
Yeah.
It's about 2 meters long, but because it's so important that he has to see home on there. Mm. Because without that, he genuinely thinks he's not getting home.
Yeah.
And it's really important to him. And after that, he's happy with assuming that mum knows what's happened after home. But he needs to see that on there. It's really important to him. Yeah. And I guess that just comes with mileage and time and experimenting with these new children, I suppose.
And having compassion that, you know, when they get upset, you know, because, you know, swimming's been cancelled, you know, I'd be upset too. And it's very quick for staff to think, you know, come on, it's okay, you know, calm down. No, let them be unhappy, because I'm unhappy too with my favourite activity.
Name that. Name that emotion as well.
Yeah, and feel it. Let them feel it.
Like on your symbols on your tablet. Yeah. Oh, we're sad.
Yeah, because that zones out.
It's really sad. Yeah. We had it, I've just moved classroom, so we had 2 year 6s that didn't get a year 7 place. So we've kept them and made a new classroom for them. So I'm now full time. But we were in the playground and he saw, he hadn't seen one of our TAs from the other class yet, you know, not purposefully, he just hadn't seen them in ages. And he got really upset. And rather than being like, oh, separate them, oh, that's really sad, oh, I said, no, come in. And she said, I miss you too. This classroom's really lovely. You know, they were talking through, he's non-speaking, but she was talking and saying, you know, I'll see you on the playground. And then after she left, we found her picture on his tablet from last year, and we were talking about her and that we're sad because we miss her. And it was a really, really important moment. It wasn't easy. He was incredibly distressed. It was heartbreaking to see. Of course, we wanted to just fix it for him, patch it up and distract him. But actually, in that moment, what was best was just to be sad together. Mm-hmm. And it's a lesson in grief almost, isn't it? He was grieving that he adores her and that he wasn't going to see her. And I think seeing her reminded him that he was sad about that.
Yeah, we've got to show passion and empathy. And I think, you know, school is their safe. It has to be a safe place. It's not just about learning. You know, school has to be a place where they feel secure and safe, and you've got to do as much as you can to put that in place. And I think it leads on well to something that I think you've pinned now.
Do you have any advice for an anxious child not wanting to attend school? So many.
And I know, I mean, my advice first thing is, whether it's their own child is or you notice that no child in your class, is just trying to work out what it is that is causing that anxiety. Is it something that's happening on the transition? Is it something that's happening at school? Take the learning out of the equation. At the moment, we need to make sure this person is feeling safe at school, and obviously at the moment they're not, and it's trying to identify.
Definitely. And I'm assuming if they're a parent, it's advocating for them and almost fight in their corner of, look, can we just not wear uniform? Can we just come an hour late and just come for half an hour? No. Can they just work with this teacher in the corridor, under the table? Can they just wear, you know, trainers and bring their teddy?
Yeah.
Can they, I've got a student that comes in with a blanket over their head.
Yeah, I've got someone who comes in with a dressing gown, dark glasses, with a rag.
Yeah, whatever works.
What does it bother me if I try? Why doesn't bother me?
It really doesn't.
You know, but you know, some people aren't very quick. That's not what we should be doing. No.
Yeah.
You know,
make whatever timetable desirable for them. Maybe they just join PE if that's their thing, and then we work up from there. Backward chain it. You know, just start with the things that you know they can achieve, and then hopefully they build confidence and we build confidence, because often they're feeling the parents' anxiety because there's so much pressure because they've got to go to work and da-da-da-da. And then the teacher's anxiety because they've got to keep them here because mum said we can't call her because she's at work today or whatever. You know, there's so much anxiety around it that's not even anything to do with the child. Let's see what works. Let's see how we can work with that, because otherwise the alternative is they will be home all the time. So if we can get them into school even for half an hour at first and work and then build on that, that would be good. Yeah. But have it be because of the child's best interest to have half an hour be at half an hour at school, not because it's in the school's best interest let me be really clear about that. This is the child leading the time and the child leading the timetable, not the staff can't cope for more than half an hour. That's not what I'm talking about. That's a whole different conversation. If the child can only cope with short stints, certain lessons, certain teachers, certain areas, start there.
Take the demand off, definitely.
Yeah, and it might just be the transition alone is enough. So it might just be the first few days of just driving to the gate, giving a high five to the teacher and going home again. And that is seen as a success. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I've had a couple of refusers that have dropped siblings off and then expected to go home again, and it ended up as it was too loud in class, or it's too busy, or they weren't being seen, heard, played with, understood. They wanted a break from their sibling. You know, there's so many reasons why they'd want to, and it's just about unpicking that, isn't it? And again, like we started right at the beginning, creating that heaven for them, creating that that amazing environment that of course they want to be in and feel safe in. And yeah, if you're a parent, you could know all of this stuff and you're like, yeah, I know, but the school aren't listening.
Hammer the school with information, you know, keep at it, you know. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, you always hear, you know, staff saying, oh, we've got a difficult parent here, and it's like, no, they're advocating for their job. And you know, good
yeah,
for you.
I always good say you. To parents, don't worry about being that parent.
No.
Because
no.
That's the only way to get yeah. things done. And actually, part of the role of the SEN parent, you don't choose this role, but you kind of find yourself in this never ending fight, basically. And unfortunately, that does come with the role, and lots of you do it incredibly well. It's unfortunately it shouldn't be the case, but it is.
Yeah, it's always a fight, isn't it, for parents? And it's, yeah, it breaks your heart. You know, we know that the system's broken at the moment, but yeah, I always think, you know, if I've got a parent who I know of who's, you know, managed to win this support and get this access to this and that, and my response was, good for them.
Yeah, absolutely good for them. Yeah. And can I email them to find out how?
Yeah.
I've done it before, actually. If I hear a parent that's, you know, written this letter or whatever and got funding or got this open the doors for something that they couldn't or whatever, I say, can I see your email thread, can you forward it to me, because and do you mind if I share it with other parents that are in a similar situation to you? And very rarely will they say no, because they know exactly where they're at. I did it with my year sevens that didn't have the school place. A child before in our class at our school didn't have a year seven place, and his parents sent me everything. There was legal statements, there was the people cc'd into it that all need to do, you know. It just makes it so much easier, doesn't it, if we're all kind of helping Absolutely. Each other out in that way. Yeah, but you're right, it's a shame that we have to do it in the first place.
Okay,
I think this might be our last one.
Go for it.
Maybe you pick one and I pick one.
Yeah, I've got one to finish.
What advice do you have for when a child starts to recognise their differences to their peers, are self-conscious of it, they don't want differentiated work, or they don't want to wear ear defenders, or they don't want to fidget? I personally use my supporting adults. So not to mock or mimic, but genuinely my supporting adults in my class are neurodivergent. Yeah. So I've got some adults that like fidgets. I've got some adults that need weighted blankets. I've got some adults that find noise overwhelming. So we model the strategies that we would want our children to use: ear defenders, weighted blankets, fidget tools, taking a break and saying it verbally, refusing consent when I ask them if they want to have a turn in attention autism. If they don't want a turn, they say no thank you and stay in their seat. I think utilizing those supporting adults as models to genuinely meet their needs, fake it too, I suppose, but actually it's even more powerful if they genuinely have those needs, but voicing the whys and what they're doing, then the children might embed a culture of this is actually perfectly okay.
And building the self-esteem of that child as well, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I'll say, yeah, role modeling completely and knowing that it's okay. And it's, and, you know, and it's so hard to, it's easy for me to say, you know, to boost their self-esteem and to know that it's okay to be different, because, you know, peer pressure, you know, growing up as a young, young person in the day and age.
But it's hard enough in this world anyway, let alone when you're aware. I often say to people that, I know non-speaking level 3 autism is a challenge, it comes with lots of its challenges, but my heart always breaks for those that are different enough but aware
of it,
to be aware that they're different and what they're missing out on is heartbreaking. And also they're so vulnerable, because like the children in my class will always have carers, they'll always have advocates, they'll always have people fighting their corner, and they'll always be so loved and almost in a safe little bubble of love, actually, alongside all of the other things they've got, you know, and got to deal with. Actually, they're always in this safe bubble of love, often. However, I'm attached to a mainstream school, and I see learners with the same diagnosis masking, having to cope, being treated as behaviour, struggling to make friends, struggling to meet their needs, struggling to communicate. And my heart breaks.
It does. For them. Yeah. And I think it's what's also important. It's not, you know, what advice do you have for the child? It's for, you know, they are who they are, and that is okay. Right. For everyone else, yeah, it's time for you to learn empathy. Yeah. And understanding about people around you and how everyone is different, and that is okay. So it's not just about the child fitting in. It's no, you fit around everyone else. But, and I've always said, I did work, my previous job was an ASD manager for a mainstream, an autism, alongside a mainstream. And I'll be honest with you, I was there for 2.5 years. I set it up, and it was a massive challenge. I was literally late 20s, and it was a big role to go to be a managerial role. But what I found the most challenging was exactly what you just said. I found it heartbreaking that, you know, teenagers, 13-year-olds coming to me going, I know I'm different, and I don't. And I used to come home and just be in tears because I just didn't know how to help them. And I found that the most
Mental health is the biggest risk for an autism diagnosis.
Yeah. But my viewpoint was always, right, assembly, tutor time, every single day for these other, for the other students in class, you learn kindness, empathy, compassion.
And it's shown that they will follow the adult's lead.
Yes, and it does work. It did work every day. That's an activity, learning that empathy and compassion for other people, and so the understanding when you saw,
because if the students are seeing a child getting told off or whatever for using their fidget or for making noises, not giving eye contact, all of those things that we probably hear all the time, they're going to learn that that's not normal. That's bad behavior. Yeah. These children are put on red and all of those things.
Yeah,
it breeds a culture of you must mask your needs to fit in, doesn't it? Whereas actually, if the teacher at the front and the supporting assistants are supportive of it, encouraging of it, understanding of it, it just breeds a culture that it's okay for everybody to meet their needs. Because let's face it, even if you're not, haven't got sensory regulation needs, if you've had some really bad news in the morning, or if you've had a really bad weekend, or there's a, you know, safeguarding concern or whatever, you might need a fidget that day, you might need more breaks that day. And it's almost like reading the culture of, like, we all go have these times where we go through something and we need something extra, and we need to be empathetic of all those times. But in the workplace too, with staff to staff, no children involved, it needs to be just part of the culture of the school. I think okay, your last question.
My last one, and it's not necessarily about students, it's about being teachers. How do you manage a work home balance?
I'm gonna be honest about this. I SEN teaching, I think we have a far better, more realistic balance than mainstream, I have to say. Lots of the things I do out of work are choices. They're the extras. I feel like I genuinely can do my day job in my hours, and I don't think not all teachers can say that. And that's because of things like I don't have 60 books to mark. All of my evidence is taken with photos and iPads and is instant. My planning is done once every 6 weeks, and then we repeat lots of things. Lots of my work tasks are actual resources, so they are in bags, and I need to collect them all once and then it's done, rather than paper photocopies, you know, creating those kind of things. So I would say in that sense it is better with time, and I think I think that's fair to say. However, it is more costly. I don't know of an SEN teacher out there that doesn't, you know, spend their own money on their classroom, because of that, we can't just photocopy worksheets and print from Twinkle. It doesn't work like that. We have to have shaving foam, fly swatters, rice, lentils.
I say food. Yeah. How many times are you on your food? The food, I'll just add it in. I know, more corn flour, more
weekly cooking lessons. It all comes out of, you know, our very limited budget and then our pockets, it does. And it's one of the reasons, well, the main reason why I started this account, I'm going to be honest, because I thought, well, I'm doing all this stuff, you know, like let's find a way of funding the fun stuff. I want to do all this fun stuff with them, but it's becoming unmanageable. Not so the job isn't unmanageable in time, it's unmanageable. It's not all energy, actually. I've got enough energy to do it. It's almost financially unviable to do everything that I feel like the children deserve within the budget. Yeah. And that was why I started it at Christmas. The budgets were getting tighter and tighter and tighter. We were losing more and more adults. We were talking about water bills and electricity bills. I thought, I've been teaching for 15 years. I've never been told about the electricity bill. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
I'm going to do something about this. So I kind of took it on my own hands inside this account. And I'm funding my own classroom pretty much, but I'm really proud of it.
I was going to say, well, the work you put into it certainly does show.
Didn't have to, but I want to. It's a choice. But as far as work-life balance goes, it's my choice to work this hard.
It's finding what works for you, isn't it? I mean, at the moment I'm working full time. I'm covering my job shows on maternity, and I didn't want to get up from her because we work so well together. So I said, well, look, I'll cover you until you're back. And there's been times where I'm just going, why have I done that? Why have I done that? Because I have found it. Two young children, I have found it difficult.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, I have, you know, own up to that. Mm. But it's obviously making time for you. Yeah. You know, I know Sunday morning I just went, I'm off for a couple of hours.
See, you making a lot of resources. You're constantly making a lot.
I do, but again, that's a choice because I do find that a relaxing hobby.
Yeah.
And I love sort of making resources, knowing that it will make, you know, what you can do. So that again. That's a choice.
Yeah.
And again,
yeah.
I go through phases. There are times where I'm just like, that laptop can go away in the evening.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing it. And that is important to do.
I feel like lots of SEND teachers that are good at the job, it's their special interest. It certainly is for me. My classroom is my special interest. Organising my classroom, creating visuals for my classroom, organising attention autism stuff, my classroom planning is my special interest. I genuinely love it. I choose it. You know, when my husband's surfing and playing games on his laptop, I don't get my laptop out and start working because I have to. It's because I genuinely really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And that's probably not healthy.
Well, I think it's just getting that balance, isn't it? I mean, yeah, I mean, my husband worked away the other night and I thought, oh, might as well get the laptop out then. I'll just, you know, make some stuff up.
I guess it's quite a creative job, isn't it? It's... I could spend time creating new interactive games. I could spend time making new like little resources. I could put together a sensory massage story. Like yesterday morning, I was up really early, couldn't sleep, so I made a sensory massage story for Black History Month, and I love it. It's really proud. I chose music for it. I'm really proud of it. But it's like I didn't have to do that. That wasn't something that was on my to-do list.
Mm.
But I really enjoy it, and I guess there's enough variety within what we could do to kind of keep it interesting, I guess. But yeah, I'm not gonna lie either. I've gone from 2 days to full time and I cried 4 times on Wednesday.
Yeah.
You can tell in one of my videos, actually. I'm not gonna tell you which one it is, but there is a video that came out this week and you can tell I've been crying.
Second day back in term, I just had a bit of a meltdown. I mean, I was full of cold anyway. That's back to school cold.
That's it. Everyone's ill.
You're run down. And that, you know, and it's okay, isn't it? And I think it's important to let people know that not every day at school is going to be perfect. They're going to come down and write that off.
No, you know. If sensory class and Mrs. Price's classroom can admit to crying, then everyone can cry. It's because we care so much, right?
Exactly. So now I think it's just a case of being kind to yourself and just doing what works for you. I mean, personally, I tend to plan. If before kids, I used to lock myself away for about a week in the summer holidays and blitz my planning so I could have the rest of the holidays to myself. With two young kids, I can't really do that now, but I would work solidly every evening from 7 to 11 every night for about 3 weeks to try and get that done, because the holidays I want, that's my time. Christmas, I don't like working over Christmas, so I'm already starting now thinking of my planning up until Easter, because I want Christmas
off. A really good point, isn't it? It's don't judge somebody on the chapter you walked in on, isn't it? So people might see my account and think, how did she do it all, and feel worse for themselves. I don't have children at home, for firstly, like, that gives a lot of extra hours, let me tell you, a lot. So don't judge your time on mine, or maybe I just work 2 days, teach 2 days a week, and you're judging yourself when you teach 5 days and you have three children under 10, you know, like, so just be kind to yourself. And actually, maybe that's just not your priority, maybe that's not your special interest, and that's perfectly okay. It's actually perfectly okay to just do your contracted hours, just do your contracted job, be kind, do your best, and go home. Like, it's actually okay.
Absolutely.
In no other profession would that not be okay.
Exactly.
Must be like, yeah, I'm a postman, but I do overtime all the time. I'm up at 3 a.m. and if I'm up in it for an hour, then I start doing my post round. No, that's ridiculous.
No, it just shows how much you care, though, for people who worry about stuff like that. Because it just, you know, in this job, it's always at the back of your mind, isn't it? In a job like this, work is always there, but it is so important to switch. You know, to learn how to switch off, and it's okay to do that.
Yeah. I had a lecture from my social worker the other day, because we're foster carers, and she said, you need to learn how to switch off. You need to do something for yourself. So maybe I should take the advice and find something practical.
That's a good one.
It's easier said than done, isn't it? On that note of crying four times on Wednesday, I'm going to end this live and have some time with my husband. Thank you so much for joining me, Katie.
Oh,
it's been so lovely.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I've absolutely loved it. And I love your page. I love everything that you do. So, no, keep on going, because I think you've got a great community on your page that just love what you do.
It's really positive. I love this audience of, it just feels like a bubble of love. Like, whenever I, like, hear the news or any horrible stories of things that are happening, I just kind of come here to my safety side in my pocket. It feels like a really safe staff room, or, like, in my pocket on my phone, which is, it's lovely, isn't it? And also all the teachers are so supportive of each other. There's no competition. It's just wonderful.
We're all in the same boat, forever learning, forever sharing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Amen. Get on my wedding.
Okay. Bye.